Welcome to Hey YA, from great new books to favorite classic reads, from news stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a book riot podcast hosted by Erica Azafetti and me, Tirza Price. We are recording this on April 21st. Hello, Erica.
Hey, 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 what's up? How are you?
I am well. How about you?
I'm doing better now that we're talking about books.
You know? Yeah, books. Books, yes. Books, books. Yes, that is always a good thing. And I so look forward to our every other Friday recording sessions because I am like, yay, today I get to chat about books with Erica, which is always fun.
Yes, it's always fun. And we're both a bunch of chatty Cathys when it comes to this. So we could talk all day.
That's putting it mildly.
Right. It's always a good time. Yes. And I've been loving your updates on your kitten, Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton. Yes. She
has the best name.
She does. She's very floofy, but she's still very petite. And oh. I look at her and I think, like, man, she's grown so much since she was like this tiny little neonate that we saved from the cold November rain. But I see her next to her big brothers and I'm like, she's still so small.
She's still really small.
Yeah.
She has a presence though, okay?
She does.
Some might even call it a stage presence.
She does. She loves jumping up onto things. Like she, every morning while I'm making breakfast, she usually jumps up on top of the kitchen cabinets and she gets up there and she like bats at the ceiling. And I'm like, you're not going to get past the ceiling, my friend. Like the buck stops there.
She never heard. She said glass ceiling where? Right. Or concrete ceiling, whatever, this drywall, whatever it is.
This plaster does not stand a chance against me and my claws.
Okay.
Yeah, and she just meows, and she's very feisty. I felt bad for her, though, because last night I went to go throw something away in the trash can, and I have one of those trash cans that has the lid that, you know, you pop up by putting your foot down on the pedal. Mm-hmm. And she likes to sit on top of the trash can because it's next to a window, so she looks out the window, and she sits on top of it. Well, she was, unbeknownst to me, because I didn't see her out of the corner of my eye, she was launching herself to the top of the trash can at the same time that I went to go open it. And so poor baby, she ended up in the trash can and she was like, what? And I was like, let me. And then she, it's like, but she didn't want me to help her out because she was pissed, understandably. And so I was like trying to pick her up and she's like, you know, slashing at me. And I was like, fine, stay in the trash can for all I care.
Stay in the trash can. Oh, call her Oscar Grouch. Oscarina. Yes. That is kind of funny. Yes. You know Jorts, the orange cat?
Yes, Jorts. Yes.
His forays into the trash can. They were more on purpose, though, I believe.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly.
Yeah, Dolly definitely did not want to stay in the trash can. She didn't want to end up there.
She was very offended. Poor baby.
I know.
Very cute. Yes.
But yes, that's the Dolly update.
I appreciate it. I look forward to them whenever they come. Whenever they come, I love them. Oh my gosh.
So you have some fun bookish news for us this week.
I do. I think you'll be able to speak on it a little more because I still haven't read books or movies. But a Twilight TV series has been announced. It's going to be released by Lionsgate Television. Lionsgate also released the movies. So Stephanie Myers is supposed to be heavily involved with it. So I feel like for fans of the franchise, they should get something good.
Yeah.
I still don't know. I see people, like, I've seen the memes of Twilight. And I'm not a Twilight hater. Like, I have no, you know, I have no problem. I know some people are like, when something's, like, super popular, people are like, oh, da-da-da-da. And that's fine, too. I get it. But I haven't read the books or seen the movies in their entirety. I've seen clips. I've seen, like, the silly parodies and stuff of them, which they give me life. They are pretty great, even though I haven't seen the movies. But I know this is going to be a big thing.
Yeah, people were like very much very excited about this. I saw a lot of excited exclamations across social media. And, you know, the people I see getting really excited about it tend to be adults, which I think is interesting too. Although I do think that there are teens who are still discovering Twilight all the time. Like, you know, the books still go out in my library. They go out to teens. So it's not just like adults coming in and checking them out, which I find really interesting. And, you know, Twilight got like a whole generation of adults into reading YA, and many of those adults, like some of them, turned to writing YA. So definitely can see why there's still like that built-in audience. I do admit that like my first reaction was like, we already have Twilight adaptations. Do we really need to tell them
in
like a different format? But it is a trend that I've noticed, because Vampire Academy, which was also very popular around the Twilight time, not as popular as Twilight, but still pretty popular. There was a movie adaptation, I think, like around 2014, 2015. The movie is very cringe, but fun. And if you want to watch a bad movie for fun, I highly recommend the Vampire Academy movie. And like, I don't even say this to be mean, like, because I love that movie so much. But it's there are parts of it where I am cringing and laughing at the same time.
There are really good bad movies.
There are, and that is one of them. That movie, though, or that series, has just been adapted yet again into a TV show on Peacock. And I watched the first, I watched like the first three or so episodes, because I love the Vampire Academy books. Like, they came out like when I was an actual teen, and I love them. And so I watched the first few episodes on Peacock. And it's really interesting to see how they change things. They update it. The TV show is much more diverse than the movie was. And then much more diverse than the books were as well. So that's kind of like nice to see diversity on the screen. But like, also there is a small part of me that's always like, but why don't we adapt something new for once? But we all know Hollywood. They like a sure bet. And if something is popular or they feel like it can make money because there is a built-in audience, like, it's going to be there. So
I wonder, so you're talking about the built-in audience as like, especially as it pertains to Twilight. But then there are also, you know, the original series was YA, so it's, you know, directed towards a certain age category. So I wonder, do you think that with this new Twilight TV series adaptation thing going on, that should they cater to the built-in audience who are older now? Or should they keep it teen-related? Should it be like Edward? I don't know how they end up. I'm assuming they end up together, like I said. I've heard so much of Twilight that I'm pretty sure I know, like, you know, the gist of it. I'm pretty sure, like, Edward and Bella, don't they have, like, spoiler alert. They have a kid or something. Spoiler alert. They have a kid or something. We kind of talked about it before. I'm like, should it show them, like, now in their current thing?
That's an interesting perspective too, because since we've already invoked the spoilers for Twilight, you know, in the fourth book, Bella and Edward get married and they have a kid, and like those are more adult things that, you know, not saying that only adults do that, but like, you know, Bella's 18, so technically she is an adult, but like, you don't see a lot of YA books covering marriage and having children. So, like, they could sort of lean into that more adult perspective as well, because there are a lot of adult fans. I don't know. I'll be really curious to see which direction they go with this. And if they change things up, if they try to make it, like, a very loyal, straightforward adaptation, I don't know. There's just a lot to consider. But I feel like, even though I am no huge Twilight fan, I will probably watch the TV series just out of an abundance of curiosity.
Yes. I am also curious.
Yeah.
I am curious. I did hear some of this stuff was a little cringe, like some of the, but I feel like I should see it for myself. Like some of the stuff in the movie, like especially, I was seeing a breakdown for it. I felt like the breakdown was objective, but
yeah.
It's like when Edward would be annoyed with her kind of, or something.
You know, it's interesting because there's so much of the emotional angst in the books that doesn't translate well into the movies, but like it's there, but it doesn't translate to the same level that is in there in the books. So it would be definitely an experience. Maybe our next buddy read should be Twilight.
Oh my God. Yes. Like a combination of like that and maybe the movies or something.
Oh my gosh. See, like, how they compare.
That's a whole undertaking.
So yeah, it's going to be a whole undertaking, but it sounds like a wild ride. Yes. So, you know, you might have that to look it forward to.
Okay. Listen. One more thing, if you're looking for fascinating stories, informed takes, useful advice, and more from experts in the world of books and reading, subscribe to our newest newsletter. It's called The Deep Dive, and get exclusive content delivered right to your inbox. You can subscribe and choose your membership level today at bookriot.substack.com. It's $5 a month, and for that, you'll get a deep dive edition of our newsletter in your inbox twice a month. But if you're on the fence, not quite sure about things, you can get a free subscription as well. It's called The Splash Pad, and it rounds up some of our experts' recommended reading and bookish lifestyle goods monthly. So if you're interested in that, definitely check that out.
All right. Well, we should hear from our first sponsor, and then we'll talk about our subject for today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawke, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books and all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters, and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawke on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Sourcebooks Landmark. So King Solomon says something very interesting to his son before he dies, and that is, quote, "Don't let the white man take the house," end quote. These, as I just mentioned, are King Solomon's last words to his son as he dies. Now, all four Solomon siblings must return to North Carolina to save the kingdom, their ancestral home, and 200 acres of land from a development company. Told in alternating viewpoints, Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris is a searing portrait of the power of family and letting go of things that no longer serve you, exploring the burden of familial expectations, the detriment of miscommunication, and the lessons and legacies we pass on to our children. It's an explosive and emotional story of four siblings, each fighting their own personal battle, because who isn't, who return home in the wake of their father's death. Make sure to check out Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris, and thanks again to Sourcebooks Landmark for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so Erica, you were the one who told me that sometimes we can steal podcast ideas from other Book Riot podcasts, which
yes,
I'm all for. I'm super excited. So you actually came up with this one, which I think is so fun. We are going to talk about science fiction and fantasy worlds that we would happily live in versus the ones we'd say heck no to.
This, I got this idea from Jen Northington. We did it for an episode of SFF. Yeah, I believe. Yeah, because there were a couple podcasts I subbed for her with her. But yeah, I was like, yoink, taking yes, it, stealing the idea. It was such a fun episode to do. So
I'm excited.
I'm glad you agreed to it.
Oh, yes.
But I have a question for you. Like what I was noticing. Okay, so some of these, it's like, I don't know, like with SFF, yeah, I feel like I had an easier time of finding books with worlds that I would want to live in. Like basically all the books that I read, I liked the books when I read them. But with the YA books, I feel like
sometimes they're pretty dark.
Yeah, and it's like, I still love the books because, yes, like, as far as YA goes, I think SFF, science fiction and fantasy, is like my favorite genre to read in YA. So I have a lot to choose from, but I'm like, but would I want to live here? No. So it was kind of like, And some of my would live in choices are kind of like, ooh, like with a disclaimer. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I feel like with the YA SFF books, fewer of the worlds are appealing to me. I feel like there's more overall strife, or like the systems in place are like worse or harder to ignore versus the adult SFF books. So I don't know if you had that experience.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing to note. Like, because I immediately just started thinking about like fantasy series and fantasy books that I love. And a lot of them I'm like, oh my God, this book is so amazing. I love it. Oh no, I would not want to live there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
So I actually had to sit down and really struggle to think, like, okay, which ones would I actually want to live in? And yeah, I did think of some adult ones, but we are not doing adult books because this is Hey YA. So I did think of two that I would happily live in. And one, not necessarily because it's a happy, happy land, but because I have sentimental feelings about the world building and I like the book. So we're just going to go with that.
Right. Yeah, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. Yeah, I feel like some of these, the ones that I would live in, I'm like, yeah, I would have to, like, at the end of the duology or series, I can live in that world, like, where y'all, you know, fix some stuff. I'm gonna wait till y'all fix it, and then I'm gonna shimmy on in there.
Yes.
But before, I'm not sure. So
yeah, the caveat, like, I would live in here after the world has been saved and whatnot.
After the end of the last page, thank you so much.
Yes.
Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So which is your first world you'd like to live in?
Okay, so I would totally 1,000% live in the Tortall world by Tamara Pierce, her Tortall series. So she has written multiple series of books that are all set in this fantastical world. Tortall is just one country, out of all of this fantasy world. But it's, you know, the central country where most of her books are set. So she has written the Song of the Lioness Quartet, which actually turns 40 this year, if you can believe it. I know. And sidebar, there is a gorgeous 40th anniversary edition of the four books in that series that is releasing in August. And they are beautiful, beautiful covers. Ooh. And they're releasing in both paperback and hardcover. So I have to get the hardcovers, obviously.
Obviously.
But I love that series. And it's, you know, I read it when I was like 11 or 12.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, as far as world building goes, I won't say that it's like the most fantastic, entertaining, spectacular world building, but it's one of those worlds where I've read so many books set into it, and like it is real enough to me and comforting enough to me that I feels like if I had to live there, it would feel somewhat familiar.
Nice.
If that makes any sense. Yeah. So most of the books are set in Tortall, but some of the series we go to other countries, other like island nations, and you do kind of get around the continent quite a bit. So I would definitely live in Tortall. And I would be happy to live in the capital kingdom or maybe like along the coast. There's a lot of really great, just like a lot of really great settings. The first part of the Alana series, you know, it's a pretty straightforward sort of like medieval inspired fantasy land. Later on, you get like a lot of magical creatures inhabiting the world because of like some sort of rip in the fabric between, you know, the mortal world and like then the world of like immortal beings. So there's a lot of like, you know, dangerous immortal beings that then inhabit Tortall later on. But anyhow, it's always a really fun world to return to in books. And it's like not too dangerous. I think that I would not want to live there.
Yeah.
I do have to say, although Tamara Pierce has not like explicitly written a ton of queer characters in her world, as she has written in this world over the last 40 years, her books have gotten progressively more diverse, I think, as she has like learned and grown as a writer. And those Alana books have always been somewhat of an appealing read for queer people. So even though there's like no homophobia in the book, books, but like there's also like no, you know, outwardly queer and out characters either. I think that they're probably, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that there probably wouldn't be too much homophobia. So I'd happily live there.
Right. Do you think in her older books, some of the characters are like coded as queer, but they're just not out, or is it there's not any of that either?
You know, I think there's a lot to be wondered about when it comes to like Alana, because she spends like half of the series disguised as a boy.
That's fair.
But she also is very much like she does not present as trans at all. Like right. She's very much like she's a woman. She likes being a woman. She values the part of her that is a woman. But she just also wants to be a cool kick butt knight. So there's that. There are a couple male characters that I think are coded as gay, and one that like I think might be confirmed bisexual. I'd have to go back and read again because I've forgotten. But then there's also a character later on, like the Kel series. Like I could totally see Kel being queer. Like she definitely has relationships with men, but like at the end of her series, she's just like, forget the guys. I'm going to go out and be a knight. And I'm like, maybe you just need a good lady to settle down with, Kel. Or not settle down with, just a lady. So anywho, that's my answer. Nice. I love Tortall. I would live there.
Nice. Tortall sounds pretty nice. I must admit, I don't remember if I mentioned this during the other podcast, but you're at Hey YA now, so I'm going to mention again in case I did. But I would like to live in the world of Rhaebear by Jordan and Fueco on the condition that things are sorted by the time I get there, all right? I need some housekeeping done. You know, we got to sort out this monarchy situation, you know? It has great potential to be a really cool place to live, I think. So the magic system in here is really interesting and cool. It takes place in, and like, I was going to say an African-inspired world, but I feel like that's just where these characters are, and they're working within the world that they know. And by that, I mean, I don't know that the world that's presented, that's talked about in the book, is all that there is to this world, if that makes sense. Like, there might be, you know, alternate Asias and Europes and stuff like that in Antarctica and all that. But it's just that the story is focused here. And it has, like, it has really interesting, like, music and art and food and clothing. And all of those things are, like, woven into the magic system. And it kind of just makes everything feel like magical and beautiful and nice. And but there is an issue of like the underworld coming to collect children, so that's a problem. What I mean, like, just
don't be a kid.
You know, if I make it out of adolescence, that's why I was like, y'all gotta clean that up first. You know, like, I would love to vacation there, but if y'all could just like fix that. I believe by the end of the second book, which I still have not read, because there are so many good books, but I really, really, really liked Rhaebear. It's so good. But yes, I believe the main character is going to get everything together. And this book is very diverse with obviously African-inspired, like Black characters, but also I think characters from like the Middle East and Asia, I believe, and different stuff. Queer characters, stuff like that. So yeah, and it's just, I would love to see this adapted for a show. We're talking about adaptations. This would be so cool because, like I said, I have loved science fiction and fantasy, YA, since forever, and I still love it. I've seen a lot of like the medieval stuff, and that's fun and great and cool, and I've loved, you know, all the dragons and all that good stuff. But I would also like to see different magic systems. And this one offers such a new, it just kind of like refreshes the genre for me in a good way. And I feel like I would love to see that on screen. Like there are different, like different groups that have, you know, different magic systems and stuff. Like there's one, I think they have, I forgot what they're called, but they deal with like wind and they have these like body markings and stuff like that. Or no, is that no, I'm sorry, I misspoke. That's if they get sent down to the underworld as children. Never mind. But the art would be cool to look at. You see, so they, okay, so it's a cool world. I love this book. I love this like series or duology. I think it would be fun to live in once they get rid of the demons. And that's
get rid of those demons. Good general rule of thumb.
Just a general, you know, like, I like to read about them a little bit. Like, you know, they add a little spice, a little change of pace. But I'm going to need those to be taken out real quick. Thanks so much. But yes, I would live there if they, you know, if they fix that.
Fair enough. So my next pick is Sorcery of Thorns by Margaret Rogerson. And then there was a novella sequel that just came out this year called The Mysteries of Thorn Manor. I would definitely live in this world, although with some caution, because there's a lot of magic that is just kind of running amok, and you got to be careful not to get caught up into it. It's kind of, how do I describe this world? It's about as like developed in terms of like technology and whatnot as like the Victorian era, but it's definitely not like our Victorian era.
Right.
It's definitely its own fantastical world. There's magic. It's called sorcery. Most people think of sorcery as something that's dangerous, and so it's regulated every which way. But the main sort of setting for the opening of Sorcery of Thorns is a library. And in this world, there are many great libraries. And you know I love a good library. Obviously. So I was like, oh, a world with so many great libraries? Sign me up.
That does sound nice.
Yes. And the libraries are very fancy and beautiful. And lots of people work there. Wow. And they're very important to this society. And they also, I mean, they have like, you know, your regular books. But what's really cool about this library, especially like the world, the libraries feel like their own little world within this fantasy world. Mm. There's like the books are not just like these static objects. Like they are living, breathing things. And so the librarians are as much like librarians as they are almost like caretakers. It almost feels like a zoo. Like they're like little, like they have to like look toward the health and the well-being of the books and the collection as well as like protect it. And so part of this too is like grimoires, which, you know, contain magic, are very much like these active things that like can escape. And if they're like, if they contain really dark magic, like you really got to have them in on lockdown. And they can be really dangerous if they escape. They can actually like morph into creatures that kill people.
Oh, well.
So like I wouldn't want to encounter a grimoire. And I'm not sure if I'd want to be the type of librarian who has to wield a sword, but I would like to work in a magical library in this lovely fantasy land where there's a lot of cool things going on. But like maybe after the events of Sorcery of Thorns when a lot of things get cleaned up.
Okay, yeah. That's another little one that needs a little disclaimer.
Right.
Yes. That does sound really nice. I might join you there once they get those grimoires unlocked, put them in a pen or something with a padlock or something, you know?
There's also demons in this one, but generally speaking, the demons are usually under somebody's control, but like if you do run into a rogue demon, you're kind of in trouble. But, you know, what's life without a little bit of risk?
What's life without a little bit of demonic, like, death, you know? Like, what is life worth living even? One would ask. But yeah, so that does sound really cool though, I'm not even gonna lie. So yes, we have more fantastic, fantastical worlds. We're going to hear once more from our sponsor real quick.
Today's episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. So this next book is a really fun sounding mashup of different genres. There's a little time travel, a little romance, a little spy thriller action going on. So in the near future, a civil servant is offered the salary of her dreams and is shortly afterward told what project she'll be working on. A recently established government ministry is gathering quote unquote expats from across history to establish whether time travel is feasible for the body, but also for the fabric of space-time. This is an exquisitely original and feverishly fun fusion of genres and ideas. The Ministry of Time by Colleanne Bradley asks, what does it mean to defy history when history is living in your house? Colleanne Bradley's answer is a blazing, unforgettable testament to what we owe each other in a changing world.
it kind of gives Outlander meets Cloud Atlas, or If the Time Traveler's Wife was written by Sally Rooney or Colson Whitehead. Make sure to check out The Ministry of Time by Kalyan Bradley. And thanks again to Avid Reader Press for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have seven great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number six. So if he is to have seven great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so the next one. I feel like looking at my list, I was going to say, I was thinking that a lot of the ones I chose take place kind of in the past, but that's not actually true. There's a difference I see. So I'm just rambling for no reason. But this next one I have is Ilatsoe by Darcy Little Badger. And I like it because, well, I really like the book, first of all, but I would live in this world because it's basically our world. But like with all the mythology and lore, like is real. And that's in different cultures. So like Darcy Little Badger is indigenous to North America as an indigenous person. I forgot what their nation is called. So it's not just indigenous North American lore that's true, but it's also like Irish lore and different ones. And I'm like, I think that's kind of cool. They're like vampires in here. Now I wouldn't want to come across them at night, but there still is a way to deal with them if you do. So I just feel like it's kind of cool that everyone's like belief system is like true at the same time, which might seem contradictory in a way, but in a way it's also not, because it also kind of just like, I don't know, I think it's interesting to see everyone's culture and their culture's origin stories kind of manifesting into real life, I guess. Now, the story itself centers around a murder, which is less than savory. But again, this takes place in basically an alternate version of our world, and that, you know, murder and stuff is part of our world, unfortunately. And I think the main character, Ilatsoe, her power is her skill, I should say. I think that's how it's regarded in the book. Is really interesting. It's a skill that's been passed down to certain women in her family. And what she can do is communicate with the ghosts of animals that have passed away. And there's this really cool scene in the book where she kind of like descends into, she basically is like at the bottom of an ocean, like in the, I'm just going to throw out a word. I don't know if this is the correct, I'm going to say like Paleolithic or whatever, but like way, 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 like a million years ago type of thing. And she's seeing like the animals floating around and stuff like that. And then she like summons them and they help her and stuff like that. So it's a really cool, interesting mythology and lore to learn about. And it was interesting seeing how the Apache lore and skills and stuff combated the more like European ones, like the vampires and stuff like that. They could banish them, and that was fun. So I think it would be cool. I think it would be cool to live in an alternate, you know, what we have now, but like with magic. I know it would get messy, but again, I think that's, you know, it's part of life. So yeah, Ilatsoe. I feel like I would live in Ilatsoe's world.
I still need to read that.
It's fun.
And every time you talk about it, I'm always like, yeah, I have a copy downstairs. I just need to go get it and read it.
Yeah. Just walk downstairs. Go get it.
Just do it right now.
Just do it right now. That's fine.
Awesome. All right. I want to talk about my next pick, which is The Lumeteer Chronicles by Melina Marchetta. That world is... Okay, so I love The Lumeteer Chronicles. The first book is Finnegan of the Rock, and then it's followed by Froy of the Exiles and Quintana of Sharon. And Lumeteer is this teeny tiny little country in the middle of a larger continent with a bunch of different countries. And the books, like the series actually covers quite a like large swath of land. And my answer on this is mixed. Like part of me wants to live there, but then the other part of me is just like, don't do it. Because it's kind of a brutal series. I love it. It's one of my favorite YA fantasy series of all time. Like seriously, if somebody was like recommend one YA fantasy series to me, this would be it.
Nice.
But the first book starts off with Lumeteer as a country being cursed because their royal family is brutally murdered in the middle of the night. And so that causes a bunch of civil unrest. And then a usurper comes in and takes the throne. That also causes a lot of drama. Basically, what ends up happening is a witch curses the entire kingdom. And because it's such a tiny little kingdom and it's landlocked, it has a wall that surrounds it. And so it's cursed so that nobody can get in or out. So if you were out when you were cursed, now you're in exile. If you were in when it was cursed, now you're stuck there. And that basically, like, that curse lasts for many, many years. And then the first book is about breaking the curse. That's not a spoiler to say, because that is the purpose of the first book. It's what it's about. And let me tell you that things are not good for the people inside, and things are not great for the people outside. Basically, it's not a good time to live in this country or in this continent at all. Yeah. But I do love the series, and as the series progresses, there's a big focus on like healing after trauma and rebuilding after trauma. And what I really liked about this series is that the first book is, you know, about what happens to Lumeteer, but then the second and the third book is kind of about like why it happened. And in the end, the characters are all left in, I think, a really good place. And I'm not going to say that like, oh, everything's fixed and everything's happy now. There's still a lot of brutality in this world, but like, it's the type of thing where I'd be like, oh, okay, I think I would want to live there by the end of the trilogy. Yeah. Like, then I'd move in.
Yeah.
But beforehand, nah, you could not pay me enough. So that is my yes/no answer.
Yes, that makes sense. I realize I messed up because I gave you two places that I will live in. It makes more sense to do one would and one would not.
Oh, that's fine.
You understood the assignment, and so yes. Thank you for making sense. But yes, I remember you always talking about that. And that's another one that I feel like we mirror each other. I'm like, oh, I need to read that one. When did you read that series, actually?
When I first read the series? I gotta stop and think about this for a second. Probably like 10-ish years ago.
Okay, cool.
And then I read... I mean, I reread it this last summer, so why it's like kind of fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, and I think about it all the time. And I liked, if I had it my way, if I had like all the time in the world, I would reread it every single year. But
I love it.
Don't have the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, sometimes it feels like I feel like kind of guilty. I'm like, why am I rereading? I have all these other things I need to read. Certain ones, if they can get you to that place, like invoke all those old feelings, it's worth it. But yeah, that one is definitely on my list. It's been there for a minute because of you, so I need to get on that. A world I would not want to live in. And another thing too, it's like with these worlds, you know, these disclaimers we're giving, like I'm coming into this world when this character is like at her worst. And the book is Bad Witch Burning by Jessica Lewis. Great book. I liked it a lot. The main character. All right. So the main character is going through it. None of it is her fault. Well, all right. She makes some poor decisions, but like the reason she's in her predicament is not her fault. and she's just trying her best to survive, like we all are. And she's young, and she's, you know, just like doing her best, really. So it centers around this girl. She has this power. She can communicate with the dead, basically. And she uses this to make money. She's kind of like in this small-ish town, and her mother like doesn't work, if I recall correctly. And she has these like deadbeat boyfriends, and they mooch off of Cottrell, the main character, who is like the only one working at certain points. And she works because she doesn't want to be homeless and she wants to have food and stuff like that. And so there's a lot of trauma in this. And even with that, sometimes you kind of want to like yell at her because she can't see what her mother is. Like she keeps giving her chances and it keeps like really destroying her until it's like, and her trauma and pain gets redirected towards people who don't deserve it. But again, she's coming from a certain place, and it's all understandable. It's just frustrating to see it play out. But the reason I wouldn't want to live here. So those are all Cottrell's problems, right? And it's like, if you live in the world, you don't necessarily have the same problems as Cottrell. But as the story progresses, she finds out that she can kind of like bring people back to life. She can summon them back. So people who died recently can be brought back to life.
Mm.
Exactly. And so she gets warned about this from one of the ghosts she regularly speaks to, because again, she makes money from speaking to people's deceased loved ones. And they're like, hey, don't do that. Don't do that. But she's making so much more money from bringing people back to life that she's like, oh, I can't not make this money. Like, she drops out of school and stuff like that because she's focused on doing this. So things start to go wrong with the people that she brings back, though. I won't say what happens, but it gets, maybe also because I'm a weenie from Weenie Hut Jr. If you know SpongeBob, you know, shout out to SpongeBob. I definitely frequent the Weenie Hut Jr. So I would not want to live in this because this was legitimately scary at times. I was like, oh, girl, run. Oh, my God. Don't go in there. But yeah, it starts to go down. So I'm like, I would not want to live in a world where someone can summon people back from the dead and then this happens. So also trigger warning for, well, child abuse, neglect, and animal abuse too. So
oh, no, not the animals.
I know. Yeah.
So
yeah, I hope she gets it together. Yeah.
I've heard that this book is so good, but also a bit dark.
It's super dark.
Yes.
But it is good. And it also, I will say, all of it could be a metaphor for just, I will take that back. Not a metaphor. It's not a metaphor. I think it shows how people can become trapped in their trauma because of who is traumatizing them. Like, say, family. Like, if it's your mother, people have mm-hmm. that attachment. And it can be hard to disentangle yourself from people who are hurting you, to like emotionally and mentally disentangle yourself. So it does a good job of showing that, even though it is frustrating. But great book, definitely read it. Would not want to live there.
Conclusion. I feel that. Oh my gosh. My pick, my next pick is the Ember and the Ashes series by Sabaa Tahir. And you all heard about how much we love Sabaa Tahir and All My Rage. This is her fantasy series. There are 4 books in the fantasy series. Have you read this series, Erica?
No, I haven't read it, but.
Oh, it's so good.
I literally have the first book on my bookshelf though.
But yeah, so it's really good. However, I would not like to live there because essentially the world is inspired by like the Roman Empire and their conquering and colonizing and brutality. So like you're really only your good options are like, well, they're not even good options. Your only options are like, do you want to be enslaved or do you want to be an enslaver? And I would personally like to opt out of both of those choices, but this is kind of like the brutal world that, you know, you live in. So the first book starts off with Elias, who is in this like very brutal military academy, and like he feels very much trapped in this world, but he doesn't like, you know, the brutality that he's expected to enact. And then Leia is the other protagonist, and she is from, you know, an enslaved and brutalized people, and she's going to go undercover in this military academy to try to, like, you know, do secret missions. She's part of the rebellion, but it's all very likely that she is very much going to be caught. Mm. There is some magic, and like the magic is in the first book kind of on the more subtle side. It kind of takes a little bit longer to show up, but then when it does, the magic is pretty cool. Ooh. But still, like, very brutal world where it's basically like you gotta be tough and be a fighter, and I am not a tough fighter at all, so I would not I just would not fare very well in this world.
Yeah.
But I love the books, and they are really fun to read, and they have some amazing stakes and danger, and they will definitely like rip your heart out, but in a good way. So Ember in the Ashes, great to read, probably not great to visit.
I need to read that, because Sabah, Miss Tahir, honey, with the All My Rage.
I know.
Got me. I was like, all right, I get it. I understand now. I didn't understand before. I understand it now. So, yeah, absolutely. So, I don't even know how our ancestors made it out of the worlds that they did, because I could not live in the Roman Empire. I could not live in, My other would not live in. I have a few choices, and I'll mention them. I won't talk about all of them. And I chose to mention some anime/manga worlds. There are quite a few manga worlds I would not want to live in. A lot of them, actually. And this is all, these are all like mostly shonen manga. So, first one is Chainsaw Man by Tatsuki Fujimoto. And it's one of those, like, the story is really intriguing. I read most of, I think some new issues came out, but sometime last year I read like the entire collection, like every volume within like a few days. It is so trippy. It's such a trippy series and kind of weird. In this world, it takes place in like modern day Japan. In this version of Japan, there are these things called devils, and they're really like, they're kind of like random. On the other hand, though, when you think of like the little bit I know of Shintoism, like Japan's native religion, it's not weird, just I guess different from my perspective. Basically, like different kinds of things have, like when things are given a lot of thought and a lot of fear is directed towards them, they kind of manifest into reality and become these things called devils. So say America has what's called a gun devil, because like that's a big thing. And like there's like, I think, a shark devil and like different ones. So this kid Denji, it's kind of like the last character I mentioned in Bad Witch Burning. Denji is like a teenager. He's actually like never been to school. His dad dies, and his dad leaves him with all this debt. And his dad owed the Yakuza, I believe, which is like a Japanese gang, right? So now they're like, well, bro, you got to pay us back. You got to pay your dad's debt off. Like, we don't care. Like, you got to pay it. And it's very brutal. So he actually kills like the devils that he comes across, because they like kill people, and they, you know, the devils, they wreak havoc and stuff like that. So they pay him pennies to do that. And he's living in these like really terrible conditions. And he's basically like an indentured servant, if not, you know, like basically a slave to this gang. So one day he gets set up by them, and they basically think he's going to be slaughtered. But this little dog that has, now remember, I told you this is out there. So there's this little dog he found that he named like Puchita or something like that. It's kind of cute. It has a little chainsaw for a nose, and it's like a little devil, but he decides not to kill it because it's like cute and stuff. So they become companions. So he's basically like killed, but the little dog saves him and the dog merges with him and gives him his like, you know, supernatural energy or whatever, and it saves Dingy. And so Dingy comes back and he becomes Chainsaw Man, and he gets recruited by this like secret organization that kills devils. They like kind of work with the government, kind of not. And so it's a wild ride. And like I said, I read most of it. Some new issues have come out. It's like kind of depressing a little bit. I'm like, I don't usually read like super depressing. Like, some of these manga can be in anime. They don't have a problem with killing all the main characters. They don't care. They'll kill them. They don't care. They're like, you can't see what's coming next. Your fave might go. Don't get attached. So this is one of those type of stories. But it's also like that can be kind of refreshing in a way, because you don't have plot armor. You really don't know what's going to happen next. And it's such a like fever dream type of like story that it like keeps you hooked. So I definitely recommend reading the manga. The anime came out recently, like within the last, I think it came out last fall. It looks really good. I'm a little behind on that. I mean, I know the story, but I would absolutely not want to live in this world. It's terrible. It's a terrible world to live in. Absolutely awful. But I do want to get caught up with the manga. So Chainsaw Man, Tatsuki Fujimoto, you know, good job creating this terrible world that I don't want to live in. But I would like to read about. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Those all sound, you know, like I said, fun to read about, maybe not so fun to visit.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to have to mention one real quick.
Please.
Because we have a little bit of time and, you know, you can jump in if you can, Erica. I would totally live in the Grishaverse. It's really dangerous.
Yes. I just started watching it. Yes.
Yay. I'm so glad. That's partly why I mentioned it, because I was like, oh, I think Erica started watching it, so I can talk about this.
Yes.
Now, to be fair, I probably wouldn't want to live in Ravka because of the whole Shadowfold situation.
I mean,
Ketterdam, I'm not saying is safe, because Ketterdam is kind of like got all of these gangs and criminal, you know, entities throughout the city.
That's where the Six of Crows are, right? Because I kind of forgot.
Yes.
Okay, I kind of mess with Ketterdam a little bit. I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah, Ketterdam seems cool. Also, I'm with Nina. I love waffles. So absolutely. I would go to Ketterdam and eat some waffles. Yeah, if I could find like a low-key place to just kind of hang out away from all the drama,
yeah,
I would live in the Grishaverse. It sounds fun.
I forgot where, because there was like kind of a place where the black people were, and there were a place where there were like more Asian people. Those two places look fun. I was like, okay, yeah, let me sample some of this food, these little street, you know, street vendors. That was cute.
And that's kind of, I think, a cool thing that like the TV series has like explored a bit, because in the TV or in the books, like you don't really go to Shuhan, but what? Like you do in the second season. So yeah. Wow. So the TV series has definitely fleshed out those worlds a bit, which is kind of exciting.
I see. Okay. Yeah. I just started the second season. I feel like, all right, we have a little bit of time and I'm excited to talk. I'm going to talk about a little bit. Like, I'm not going to do too much, but I finished the first season and I felt like, because I'm following your recommendation of like, when I asked you how you thought I should approach the series, of like watching the show and then going to read Six of Crows. That's what I plan to do. So I feel like I got more invested in the show like as I progressed in season one, and then season two, I'm like, ooh, this is really, you know what I mean? This is really good. Like the beginning of season one. And it also was like, you know, part of it is becoming attached to the characters. I wasn't necessarily attached to them. And also learning the world. There's something about the main character that I found a little annoying, but maybe that's just me. Just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Alina, it's interesting because once you get into season two, that's when the show starts to go like further afield from the books.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, you still have the characters and, like, I think the spirit of the characters is kept alive pretty well. But, yeah, like, the season two ending is, like, that, like, basically I'm like, that doesn't happen in the books at all, but it does set you up to then start to get into like the Six of Crows plots. Oh my gosh, yay, I'm so glad that you're reading them or watching the show and then you want to read the books.
I really like the Six of Crows characters. I really like them.
Yeah, and I think that like in the books and in the show, they're just more interesting characters.
They are.
So, I just tend to think that, like, Leigh Bardugo, she was a very good writer. I really liked Shadow and Bone when it first came out. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, the Six of Crows, like, it's like she was a good writer, and then she just kept getting better and better. And then, like, the Six of Crows was kind of, like, when it just, like, it hit.
It hit.
Yes.
Everything
this came is together. So good. Yeah.
And it does feel like two separate series almost. And normally with shows and books, I don't always like multiple perspectives, because there's usually a perspective that I want to hear more. And then when they go to the other perspective, I'm like, oh, when are we getting back to the one I actually want to hear about? But with this show, I will say each time they switched, I was invested in who they switched to. So that was done really well.
Yes.
Even though I liked the Six of Crows characters, like, just, and they're more interesting. I want to know, like, okay, what are your life stories? I'm just getting into, kind of just found out about, what's the leader's name?
Oh, Kaz's backstory.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just figuring that out. Is really sad. I feel like all of their stories are probably sad. The other one, the shooting one, I don't know what his story is yet, but it's starting to reveal itself slowly.
And Jasper. Of course,
yes. Oh my God. They're all so fun. I love them. And so.
Yes.
I feel like they do a good job with the multiple perspectives. And I also like how, even though you have this this magic, like the, you know, the whole magic system, they're not like overpowered, the magic people. Like the Six of Crows can still hold their own. I mean, there's a little more to that was revealed also.
Yeah.
But, so no spoilers. But, I mean, you got the Wraith, old girl. She can, you know, finagle out of anything. So it's like, it kind of balances things. Yes.
Yeah.
And I forgot everybody's name.
They're all powerful in their own ways. Yeah. And yeah, the people who have magic, it's not necessarily like, oh, now you're the one in charge or you're the one in control. Like, it's very nuanced, which I appreciate.
And I really like the Darkling's mother. I like her.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So if you haven't read anything in the Leigh Bardugo Grishaverse, definitely go read Shadow and Bone. Mm-hmm. Go read Six of Crows. They're so, so good. And yeah, despite the dangers and despite the risks, I think I would live there.
Same. Absolutely.
Well, now I feel like I want to do this with every YA fantasy novel I've ever read.
Yes.
But unfortunately, we just don't have the time.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for tuning in this week. We appreciate it. Feel free to leave us feedback on the show. You can leave us feedback on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and just lets us know how we're doing. And it also helps others to find us. So thank you for that. And of course, you can always reach out and contact us at heyya@bookriot.com. Don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and of course, all things bookish. Thank you again to today's sponsors for making the show possible. And thank you so much to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. She really makes us sound very pretty and not like a mess. So we appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I hang out at Tears of Price. And what about you, Erica?
Oh Lord Jesus, I'm on Twitter, y'all. I may have to make some changes. I'm at Erica_EZE_. I'm gonna figure some things out, but yeah.
Yes. I hear you. All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you again in 2 weeks. Until then, happy reading.
Happy reading.